In the aftermath of the devastating Four Mile Canyon fire, it's important to reflect on the trade-offs of living in, of developing homes in the mountains, particularly in the so-called wildland-urban interface. That's the private land where urban development, namely homes, can mix with undeveloped forest on neighboring public land. It's also worthwhile to understand the historical context of this fire-prone landscape and fire management policy, and to think about what type of development makes sense there in the future. It's a future that will bring more megafires, especially as climate change, droughts, and population growth accelerate and collide. So to help us understand and act on these issues, we have three guests on the show. They are Will Tour, Boulder County Commissioner and former Boulder City Mayor. Will's calling in from his office as he needs to leave by 9 o'clock. Welcome, Commissioner Tour.
Thank you.
And Patty Limerick is a history professor at the University of Colorado Boulder. She's co-founder and chair of the Center of the American West, and she's written extensively about fire history in the West. Welcome, Professor Limerick.
Thank you for having me.
And we have Rod Moraga, co-founder and fire management consultancy from Anchor Point Group in Boulder. He's a fire and forest ecologist and a federal firefighter, and he lost his own home to the fire while on duty saving other homes as a firefighter. Welcome, Rod.
Good morning.
So we'll soon open the conversation to listeners, so please get your questions ready. First, the number to call is 303-442-4242. So I want to let Will Tour share some thoughts soon, so people will have a chance to respond to questions. And first, could each of you briefly offer some short takeaway, an impression, a lesson, or a particular question that the fire has left you with? So we'll return to these issues a bit later in the show. How about Patty Limerick?
The takeaway for me is to think very hard before I write about topics. I've written about wildlands, urban interface fire. I've been blunt in what I've said, and it never really occurred to me that I would know people who lost their homes in my home community. So the takeaway very personally for me is think about the implications of what you're writing. The bigger one, though, is that these are remarkable opportunities to think about what we're doing and how we should conduct ourselves in the future, and this opportunity has come down very hard on us.
Thank you. And Rob?
Well, similarly, I have this thought that I've been talking about this and professionally been recommending things in the, you know, urban interface for 20 years now, and never actually thought it would happen to me. And so I come with the same idea that, you know, now it really hit home, literally, and that we've always said here as emergency firefighters, we've always said it's not a matter of if but when these fires will come to us. And the lesson that I learned more than anything is at the end of the day, if you don't take responsibility for yourself and your property, you may or may not have others to help you.
And Will Tour, County Commissioner, how about you?
You know, to me, one of the big takeaways really is that what was just said, it's not if, but when. You know, I look back over the last 10 years and the major fires that we've had with the Overland Fire by Jamestown, the Old Stage Fire, the fire just south of the county line by Rocky Flats, and you know, now the Four Mile Canyon Fire just in the last 10 years. And it really does, you know, reinforce the message that we need to assume that over time, you know, all of these forests are likely to burn. And how do we respond to that?
So, Will Tour, first for callers, again, the line to call in is 303-442-4242. And little ground rules, please, you can give us some comment, but please have a question and keep it brief so as many callers as possible can call in before we end at 9:30. And ideally direct it to Will first so he can chime in before he has to leave a little before 9. So, Will, how about first just give us a lay of the land. Describe the so-called wildland-urban interface we're talking about here in Boulder County. So it's apparently the most densely populated forested area in the state, and certainly no stranger to wildfires. So should we assume that we'll have more and more extreme fires here in the future? And is it just a matter of time until the forests will all burn, for that matter?
So, you know, if you look at the pattern of development in the Boulder County mountains, it's pretty striking what you see. once you get north of Left Hand Canyon, the vast majority of land is public land, and that's the reason that the Overland Fire near Jamestown, which was not that much smaller than the 4 Mile Fire, it was almost 4,000 acres. This fire was a little bit over 6,000 acres. But that one burned, I believe it was 13 homes. And the reason is that it's almost all public lands. So while it was a tragedy for the people who were affected, it was not nearly the magnitude of disaster that we are facing now. But once you get south of Left Hand Canyon, basically from Boulder Canyon to Left Hand Canyon, east of the Peak to Peak Highway, that's where much of the gold and silver in the mountains around here was. And so in the 1870s, 1880s, through the early part of last century, the federal government, allowed people to patent literally thousands of mining claims in that area. So you have this incredible crisscross of privately owned lands, many of which have been developed, and more of which may be developed in the future, although probably not much more. And, it's clearly the case that you're better off not having a lot of development in places that are prone to devastating wildfires. And so in those areas where there is not yet significant development and there is an opportunity to acquire significant chunks of land as open space or as public lands and keep them from being developed into the future, I think we ought to be taking those opportunities. But in that area, really from Boulder Canyon to Left Hand Canyon, the development pattern is pretty well set. And I think that, on into the future, what we really will need to focus on in that area is what can be done in order to assure that homes, are built with ignition-resistant construction and have adequate defensible space. And because I don't think we're going to see the development pattern change in any significant way there.
So you're
saying we're going to see a lot of additional development.
So you're saying that, much of the land then between Boulder Canyon and Left Hand Canyon is spoken for. So isn't this so-called wildland-urban interface in the county, 60% of it or so has been developed? So you're saying that is pretty much a foregone conclusion. People are going to rebuild. There's not much to do from a policy or carrot or stick perspective, but really we should be looking at the percentage of that land that has not yet been developed and how to protect it and what smart development looks like.
So I think that is accurate, that certainly there may be some people even after this fire who choose not to rebuild. And at the county level, we are looking, for instance, at whether we can ramp up our transfer of development rights program in order to provide some additional options for folks who may not want to rebuild to be able to transfer that land into a protected status and get some financial benefit from it to make it easier for people to make that decision if they want to. But by and large, I don't think that that's going to – I think most people are going to rebuild, and there are so many other homes that are already built in that same general area that the development pattern, as I said, I think is pretty well set in that area. Where we have some opportunities to – make some significant changes are really, I think, in some of the other parts of the county where you still have some significant chunks of private land that have not been developed, where I think there is an opportunity to acquire that land as open space. It's really some of the large chunks of land by Heil Ranch and by Hall Ranch and by Caribou Ranch that, 20 years from now, they could have a bunch of homes on them and have significant fire dangers threatening those homes, or 20 years from now, those could be publicly owned open space. And
right.
I think that's the kind of decision that we really have to make.
So I want to let Rod Moraga, fire management consultant, and Patty Limerick both comment, respond to that. But first, since Will, I know you have a short time here, I want to let the first caller chime in. That's Gail from Highlands Ranch. Welcome, Gail.
Hi. I start with a comment and then leading to my question. just as a viewer of news, watching the photos of where the fire burned on television, I saw that the defensible space around some of the homes really made a huge difference. And I don't know if anybody's like crunched the numbers to know whether or not, you know, in what percentage of the cases of the structures being lost was the defensible space worthwhile. And then what I was wondering is, would there be any strategies that could be on the table about providing people that want to live there in the mountains could pay into a fund that's used to convince those who don't do the defensible space. In other words, everybody's affected by the lack of defensible space. It might save your own property, but it definitely helps to spread the fire. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, thanks, Gail. Will Tour, County Commissioner, you want to respond to that first, and then I'll let Rod Moraga?
Sure. So we do not yet have real analysis of if you look at which homes burned and which ones did not burn. We don't have a comprehensive analysis of that, looking at defensible space and ignition-resistant construction issues. We have lots of anecdotal information about, you know, particular structures, but that kind of analysis I think we will get, but don't have it yet. To the casual observer, it's pretty remarkable if you go up Sunshine Canyon, for instance, to see an area where almost every house is burned and the ones that are remaining are primarily, you know, stucco homes with metal roofs, with circular driveways around them where grass couldn't burn up to the edge of those homes. So to the casual observer, it certainly appears that it made a difference, but we'll get that analysis a little bit later. Certainly, as people rebuild, they will have to comply with modern building codes that do include both defensible space and ignition-resistant construction requirements. And since 1995, all of the construction has needed to meet that. I think one of the big questions is what additional things can be done to assist people with older homes in taking some of those actions.
Thank you. Rod Moraga with Anchor Point Group, one of our guests in the show, along with Patty Limerick from CU, historian. Since you work not only in Boulder County, not only lost your home, not only as a firefighter, but have worked on fire management plans around the country, what's your response to this in terms of could there be some sort of strategies fund, and what percentage of those homes that were lost maybe were not defensible?
Well, to the first part was, I firsthand witnessed defensible space and fuel breaks, for that matter, which are larger areas of mitigation, did work. They worked very well. I think it's really important that people understand that a fuel break, especially, and defensible space as well, are made to mitigate and to minimize fire behavior, to change it enough so that firefighters feel comfortable going in and making a stand. They're not fireproofing. They're by no means meant to completely stop fire. Defensible space works. However, a lesson that I learned very hard is that without ignition-resistant construction, defensible space is only going to take you so far.
Such as what? A couple examples.
Well, what happens is that an ember can fall on your house directly. So even though you have 30 feet of cleared land with no vegetation, because of the winds as they were on that fire, embers were just showering down. Well, if they land on something receptive like your wood porch or your, you know, more obviously a stack of wood right next to your house or a bunch of pine needles, regardless of how the rest of it is mitigated, the home itself wasn't able to withstand the ignition at that point.
Right. Thank you. And I want to remind callers again to call in 303-442-4242. We have another caller, Lynn from Boulder. Welcome, Lynn.
Hi, I just have a question with regards to you're talking about how close people live to each other and how the urban wildlife interface is impacted more as more people live there. But what I wonder about is how these fires from the mountain communities could come down. Could they burn down Denver? You know, I mean, I know that I was potentially evacuated in a much more intensely populated area. And how can how does that fit into the picture?
Why don't we let Patty Limerick see you, historian? You have a sense of sort of this landscape now versus many, many years ago, and what sort of patterns might we see in the future, something that devastating?
Well, I'm glad that Lynn brought up urban fire, because as a historian, I think that's an encouraging lesson, that in the 19th century, every newly founded Western town, I think really very close to without exception, burned down. And that was because they had built all these wood buildings, and then and they did not have much in the way of an organized water supply, and they may or may not have had a set of firefighters available. So just about every town burned down, sometimes two or three times. They would rebuild in wood, and then it would do it. I think Flagstaff might have gone down three or four times before they finally thought, this is a pattern. So that was the pattern of urban fires was the 19th century story. And then people learned lessons and changed their conduct. And brick and stone buildings downtown, organized water supplies, organized firefighters. I mean, it is possible for human beings to make some remarkable errors of judgment and court risk unnecessarily. And finally to say, let's not do that. And to have authority behind that. Now, as to what's happening between just how far that wildland-urban interface extends into urban, I don't know. I'm about three blocks from open space on the other side of town, in a quite settled area. But I don't know what the embers, the wind, the sparks. I don't know. Yes. It's a wood house. So I was not feeling complacent. In fact, I will never listen comfortably to wind chimes again, because that Thursday night where the parts of North Boulder were under evacuation, my neighbors had wind chimes, and it was like Alfred Hitchcock was doing wind chimes. Anybody who ever gives me wind chimes, I'm going to say, get out of my life here. I don't want to hear those darn things. It was very spooky and very wonderful about 11 o'clock when the wind chimes shut up. That was really a great moment. But who knew with a fierce wind and the way in which this delightful community has open space all around it, what a wonderful amenity, until you're hearing those wind chimes and thinking, oh boy.
Yes.
Rod,
I mean,
this is Rod Moraga from Anchor Point Group.
Yes, we do. I worked for the City of Boulder in the fire department in the wildland division for years as well. And part of our planning process was looking at the first couple of blocks at the edge of all of our open space systems. So down in Shanahan Ridge is an example that comes to mind very quickly. Now Dakota Ridge up north. As we saw in the old stage fire, we did have to evacuate what would not really be considered urban interface. It would be an urban edge at best. But the reason we have to consider that is because the history of wildfires in Boulder County is wind-driven, whether they be Chinooks in the wintertime or what we saw last month now, I guess. Wind is always a huge factor for us, and the vegetation, depending on what it is, can throw embers past the area of the currently burning vegetation, and that's just called spot fires. And if all you have in front of you